Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. This is our Q&A series where I answer your questions regarding the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker. Let's get started. This next question comes along with several questions. They were personal questions. They were answered privately through email. This one was also answered, but it's a fairly good question, so I want to share it. Also, I was on Medicare when I applied and was accepted for my current life insurance policy. If I get out of Medicare, will that have any bearing on my current life insurance policy? And the answer is no. Whatever you do, if you own a life insurance policy, you don't own, you're applying for it, has no bearing on your health insurance. And you really began the question, if I get out of Medicare. Look, Medicare is an age-based benefit. You have a birthday at age 65 in America today, you're going on Medicare. So I would enjoy proper counsel before you opt out of Medicare. Okay. I don't think that would necessarily be a good idea. Okay. I bought $4,000 to $5,000 in PUA. So I paid $4,000 to $5,000 in PUA premium so far. And I have about $5,000 left that I can pay in PUA premium. My understanding is that this goes toward death benefit and the cash value. Okay, PUA, paid up additions rider. So when you pay a premium, a paid up additions rider premium, and let me be clear, when you write a check or send money to the life insurance company, it is all either premium or loan repayment. Okay. And then within the infinite banking footprint, of course, the PUA, the paid up additions, is a rider that allows early cash value. That's why it's used in the infinite banking footprint. Then if you have a mutual policy or a policy issued by a mutual company, the dividend can be paid into the paid up additions as well. This individual has paid $4,000 to $5,000 in PUA premium so far, has about $5,000 left ability, right? He has $5,000 additional premium dollars that he could pay to the PUA. And I know I'm being repetitive. His understanding is that, does that go to the death benefit and the cash value? And the short answer is yes, right? Paid up addition. So the paid up additions is the additional death benefit that's paid up with that one premium payment, all right? And so all PUA, excluding the dividend, if the dividend is out, you know, applied, paid to the paid up additions rider, there's typically no fee on that. With a paid up additions premium that you write a check for and send to the company, they all have a PUA charge, right? So net of that charge, the net premium buys paid up death benefit, and the remainder goes straight to the cash value component of that rider. So the short answer is yes. And, you know, I talk about this several times, several different locations, and it kind of gets into the structure. You should know your policy, the one that you own or the one that you're considering purchasing. You should understand the dynamics, what you can do and what you cannot do with a paid up additions rider. And then if you don't pay that PUA premium in a given year that you have the contractual right to pay, if you don't pay that, what happens if you don't? Typically the PUA ability to pay future PUA premiums goes down. It'll be after a time period, 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. My encouragement is for you to know your policy and you understand the riders of your policy and how they work and how they affect you and what you do or what you don't do. Great question. In this email, which I don't know who it comes from. My bad. I hope this email finds you well. James, I hope this email finds you well. I'm considering utilizing my own personal policy to pay off a loan that I took out a couple of years ago. The loan was to pay a tax bill due concerning his K-1 at the time. I have since transitioned to W-2 employee since then. I would be putting around $50,000 pulling around $50,000 from my SEP IRA that I no longer contribute to and really have no confidence in for the long-term investment options, and putting that money into the policy, then taking a loan from the life insurance company, collateralizing that policy to pay off that tax loan of 11.6% interest rate on the personal loan for the tax liability. Okay. I realize that there will be a 10% penalty along with taxable income, but am I missing anything that I should be considering? All right. So he has a SEP IRA that the limit is, you know, he's got $50,000 there. In the first year, generally, you can pay $50,000, a whole calculation of what you can pay into a SEP IRA. It's a qualified plan, so he's under age 59 and a half. So if he liquidates that $50,000 from the SEP IRA, there is a 10% penalty because he's under 59 and a half. But the whole amount, not the net amount, the 90% that he would enjoy after the 10% penalty, the whole value is distributed and taxable as the ordinary income in the year of receipt. Okay, whatever tax bracket he may or may not be in. So he's asking, you know, he has the ability to pay that premium into his policy. He has the money in the SEP. He's going to take it out, incur the penalty and the taxation, pay a premium to his policy, and have no idea what the premium breakdown is, but if it's all PUA, there's a charge to a PUA premium. So you're going to work with the net numbers. You withdraw $50,000, they're going to automatically withhold, or should withhold, 20% in ordinary income tax. So you're going to get 80% of the 50, and then you're going to pay a 5% penalty. And the next time you file your taxes, and so there's, you know, 50, then you net down, you're at 40, and then you're going to pay 5, which is 10% of 50,000, 5% penalty on that. So now you're at 35,000. You pay the $35,000 into your straight up PUA. If you have that room available in your PUA, there's a charge to your PUA, whether it's 4% or 15%, depends on the company, depends on the policy year. Then there's a net number. Then you're going to take that net number and then borrow against it. Right. And then the life insurance company has a loan interest charge. Yes, it's lower than 11.6 here. This is 2024. As interest rates have moved up in the economy, loan interest rates have also moved up within the life insurance industry. And so, but yeah, you're going to pay a loan interest rate lesser than 11.6. And so he realizes all that. And then he continues, you know, beyond, is there anything I'm missing that I should consider? I plan to pay down the policy loan long term, but it would free up around $1,200 in monthly cash flow in the short term. Well, yeah, until the loan's paid off, right? And then he references an article from Banknotes that Robert Murphy wrote, a similar situation, and he wanted to get my take on it. Okay, so I've kind of gone through the math loosely, generally, and, you know, you can math it out and you decide if that's something that you'd like to do. I don't know how old you are, but can you use that capital over and over and over and overcome the 10% penalty, because it's all taxable on withdrawal of qualified plans. And so you're withdrawing in a known tax bracket, okay, compared to withdrawing it later in an unknown tax bracket. right? And then you have the use of that capital, right? And however old you are, and over and over and over, velocity, right? The grocery store business, or the grocery store in Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker. It's not how much you make on a can of peas. It's how many can of peas can you sell? How many times can you recycle that money or use that capital through your system? Can you win doing that? Yes, you can. But be clear on the math, and you are clear on the math. And then my take. What we didn't talk about here much is now you're going to free up $1,200 a month in free cash flow. And if you don't have the discipline to take that $1,200 a month and be honest banker and repay the policy loan, that's a concern or something that you should consider. And then if you don't have the discipline to treat your money and your cash flows like you do the third-party lender, that 11.6 loan interest rate that you had to borrow personally, private loan to pay Uncle Guido off, you know, you're going to pay Uncle Guido off, no question, because what he can do if you don't pay off a debt to him, right? And then the third-party lender, they're controlling the loan repayment, they're controlling the interest, they're controlling everything. So can you do better than that? Yes, potentially, do the math. But if you don't have the discipline to own that $1,200 a month cash flow that you freed up, then you're shortchanging yourself. That $1,200 a month should be a loan repayment. So you can do it again and again and again. So don't treat your money, your capital, your cash flows with any less respect than you treat the third-party lenders. It's real. I see it over and over and over. It's easy to get a loan from the life insurance company. You control the loan repayments. And so you've got to make sure that you have the discipline to control those cash flows, right? So Nelson's four fundamental rules. Number one, think long term. You're thinking long term. I don't know how old you are again, but going through the math on that one situation, right? Number two, don't be afraid to capitalize. Okay, you're not afraid to capitalize if you've already started a policy and now you're talking about paying additional premium, right? And then number three, be an honest banker. Don't steal the peas. All right, that's my commentary on that. Discipline. Treat your money with a greater respect, therefore greater interest rates, quote unquote, than you do the third party lender's money. All right, great. Thanks for sharing that with me. In this email, I've been learning about IBC, the infinite banking concept, and really appreciating your podcast lately. Thank you for listening and that, you know, the kind words. I heard you mention something recently about the difficulty of having a life insurance policy as a U.S. citizen living abroad. After hearing this, I figured I would check in before I devote too much time and research. It is very likely that I will live at least part-time, possibly full-time in parentheses, in South America, beginning in the next 3 to 5 years. Is living abroad more of an issue for initial acquisition of a policy? Will moving away after a policy is in effect cause problems? Do you see any way forward for me with starting my first policy? If this is likely to be the case? Another question. Also, can a non-U.S. citizen be the beneficiary of a policy? Thanks for considering my questions and for all you do, Charlie. Thanks for the email, Charlie. Great questions. So the challenges in the beginning, always with life insurance policies, in the beginning, going through the application process, are you insurable? Is there insurable interest, suitability? Do you have the capital, the means to pay the premium that's illustrated? And then the health underwriting, right? So I don't know, but you may possibly live full time in South America beginning in the next 3 to 5 years. You don't say where you live currently, but I'm making a pretty safe assumption just based on the phone number that you included in the email, which has a U.S. area code. Okay. But I could be wrong. That's not, a, you know, I'm still assuming. So if you're a U.S. citizen and you're currently in the States, you're a U.S. citizen and may go abroad. Well, may go abroad means you may not go abroad. So the underwriters are looking at right now when you make an application, you know, unless you have a trip abroad scheduled, unless you have that, you know, scheduled, you've got tickets purchased and what have you, then you can more than likely own that policy, get the policy in force while you're a U.S. citizen living in the U.S. Then when you move, if you move, nothing really changes as far as that policy. The company, once a policy is issued, they can't come in there and modify it or change it because you moved. However, wherever you might move, you would want to make sure that their banking system is functional or affiliated with the U.S. banking system. I understand we're trying to get away from the banking system and become our own banker, but still the bank, if you look at bank, it is really the movement of money, right? Deposits, withdrawals, loans, loan repayments. Banking, in a sense, is the movement of money. So if you're going to move money into a policy, i.e. premium or loan repayments, and move money out, withdrawals or loans, then, and especially if you're abroad, you're going to do that electronically or through the mail. And if you do it through the mail, you're not going to send pesos, right? Because they're not going to convert the pesos if you sent cash. So you're going to send a check, a wire transfer. All of that is through a bank, right? Or check, wire transfer, automatic premium payments through checking account deductions. So you need a country that has a banking system affiliated, integrated with the U.S. banking system. Okay, so there is a way forward for you, in my humble opinion. Can a non-U.S. citizen be the beneficiary of a policy? Yes, but not likely in the beginning. You know, I'm not going to go to a life insurance company and say, hey, I got a great aunt that lives in Ukraine, which is, and look, these life insurance companies grade the countries, you know, so you're not going to go to Korea. They're not affiliated with the U.S. banking system. You're not going to go to Russia, Ukraine, some of these gangster countries in South America. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to you and where you're moving, but some of those countries, they're just not going to issue a policy in. Even if you're a U.S. citizen living abroad, there are ways to come to the U.S. and get a policy in force, but there are countries that's not going to happen if you live a certain amount of time in those particular countries. Okay. So can a non-U.S. citizen be a beneficiary? Yes, but not in the beginning. Can you potentially change that? But the problem there is, right, what is the structure in that country, right? Is, you know, Mary Dominguez down there and what other South American country, how are they going to find her? You know, how is she going to, you know, it's possible. I'm just saying there's particular challenges. Yes, a non-U.S. citizen can be a beneficiary of a policy if it's changed later, not in the beginning. Okay. Thanks for considering my questions and for all you do. You're welcome. Thank you. And I hope that answered your questions. And if not, look, if you have a question and you don't find it here, just call our office, right? All the deets are in the notes. Email james@bankingwithlife. Live people on this side. There's beautiful people that show up here every day and provide service to our clients and prospective clients. All right. So if you have a question, and just because you ask a question doesn't mean I'm going to answer the question, you know, on a podcast. And I get lots of questions and they say, James, here's my situation. Please don't share it. No problem. I mean, we're very respectful. Okay. So I'll leave it at that. Okay. And here's an email from Andrew. And Andrew, what's your feeling regarding receiving loans against your whole life policy at a significantly lower rate than a traditional bank? excuse me. I know there are many negatives to this strategy due to the positives, quote unquote, lower rates and compounding growth on full policy value outweigh the negatives. Well, the question is specifically centered around interest rates. Well, you know, here we are in 2024. Interest rates have been going up. In my opinion, they're going to continue to go up or plateau before they go down. And we're coming out of a 15-year interest rate low environment. So my point here, is there arbitrage? Are the policy loan rates lesser today in July 2024 than bank loan rates? And the answer is yes. Right. Well, give the life insurance companies time. As interest rates move up in the markets, the first thing that happens is banks raise their interest rates. Life insurance companies will also increase their loan interest rates. They're just slower. They're mutual companies. They move like molasses in the wintertime, but they will raise, and they have raised, their interest rates. But a decision should, in my opinion, should not be based on interest rates. You know, can you take advantage of arbitrage right now? Yes. Can you borrow money at a lower rate comparatively, you know, from the third-party lenders currently? Yes. Well, if we go back 10 years, you know, the argument against the infinite banking concept was, oh, I can go borrow money cheaper. This is not about interest rates. It's about controlling the banking function. You go borrow money from the third-party lender, they're going to tell you how much interest you pay. They're going to tell you what you're going to collateralize. And they never ever under-collateralize a loan? Oh, and then the notes are callable. Oh, okay. So who's controlling the banking function? With a third-party lender, they are. If you practice becoming your own banker, you don't take shortcuts, understand what you're doing, understand the policy that you own, you can control the banking function, regardless of the interest rates. So, yeah, there are a lot of negatives to this strategy, and most of them are there's not an original negative argument to the infinite banking concept that I'm aware of. The buy term and invest the difference is over 100 years old. Right? Buy term and invest the difference. What's the rate of return? What are the costs? What are the fees? They're all rehashed. And so do you want to go and listen and adopt someone's opinion and just repeat what they say because they say it with confidence? And maybe so. Maybe you can discover the infinite banking concept and what it could mean to you, and you decide. You know, I had a conversation with Ryan Griggs this morning on the way into the office, and we were talking about a particular book that he's reading, and you know, and the man's a reader, right? Andy's a thinker, and it's very common in society today. If I hear something and it's within my comfort zone and I'm inclined to believe it and it's given with authority, I'll just adopt it. And it's almost like we quit thinking when we do that. Think through the interest rate. Think through these negative comments and ideas about the infinite banking concept. Perfect. Maybe it doesn't make sense to you. My encouragement is to think through the ability to control the banking function in your lifetime using dividend paying whole life insurance, and thinking through that over a long time period, your lifetime, right? Not about one loan, not about arbitrage currently while, you know, loan rates are different between a life insurance company and a third party lender. Those are all going to change throughout your life. All right. Okay. And I mean that in love and encouragement. So I hope that answers your question. So the negativity, look, if you want the negative about the infinite banking concept, just go look up Gary North. Wrote a book. Nelson loved this guy. And, you know, I've talked about this many times. You know, I'm like, Nelson, why do you like this guy? Have you seen this article? Well, of course I've seen that, James. He doesn't know what he doesn't know what you know. He doesn't know. He doesn't understand life insurance. The book I think it was an article, Let Us Pray. P-R-E-Y. So this guy's I think he's a historian, but he comes across as an economist, and then he weasels his way into the Christian community, you know, like he's a Christian financial counselor, and maybe he is, right? But he sure didn't like whole life insurance, and he sure didn't like life insurance agents. Terrible article, or very negative article. In my opinion, it's terrible. Is it worth reading? Yeah, you want to hear the negative end of it? There. Go listen to Susie Orman. Go listen to Dave Ramsey. You know, I've got a book on my shelf somewhere. It's 100-year-old talking about buy term and invest the difference. Go through that. You cannot live or die on one single point when it comes to life insurance, is my point. And just because you hear something that you agree with, don't stop thinking. Go ahead and read both sides, right? Read all that negative stuff you want to, you know, and then try to get it off of you if you can. But then read Nelson's work. It stands alone. It doesn't need me or anyone else. His work, Becoming Your Own Banker. Okay. I digress. So, and this question, is it possible, have you done or for you to do a podcast for seniors 65 and older who are getting a late start on developing the infinite banking system for themselves? Is it too late if one is age 65? And then he's very nice in closing. This is from No Time. Thank you for the nice comments. 65 is not too late. I don't have a specific work, a product or material or content that solely focuses on people that are 65 and above. But I would direct you to Nelson's work, Becoming Your Own Banker, first book. Second book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth. In his first book, Becoming Your Own Banker, page 70, 71, and even distribution of age classes. And while I'm there, you go ahead and flip around to page 50. I know all of you IBC experts know these page numbers right off your top of your head, and I respect that. This happens to be the fifth edition, and the page numbers have changed three times. In my own defense, equipment financing, page 51. Okay. So to answer your question, I would encourage you to go to page 71, 71 and 72, an even distribution of age classes. Nelson breaks down the age classes in four different categories. And then I'm telling you, understand that. Wrap your mind around that. Don't get lost in the numbers. Understand what he's talking about. And he's talking about a grandparent who has all the money and jumping their children and buying policies on grandchildren. Okay? All right. Understand that. Get a firm grip on that. And if you have any questions after you've read that, and you know, call my office or send me an email, james@bankingwithlife.com. And then go back, after you've read an even distribution of age classes, go back to page 51, equipment financing, and look at all of those illustrations, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and understand those. And those are difficult to understand unless you know something about life insurance, unless you've listened to Nelson Nash himself talk on his 6.5-hour DVD or digital download that's available. Because agents get lost on that and the structure of the policy and what have you. But in equipment financing, Nelson did not take a loan and finance a truck, a logging truck, until the fifth year. He paid premium for 4 years out of pocket, and then he offset the premium. The premium was still being paid, and then he illustrated a loan being taken every 4 years, and he's replacing logging trucks every 4 years. Now, you look at those numbers in illustration number one, he could have financed that logging truck in year two. All right, James White, what is that? You read an even distribution of age classes, page 71. Then go to page 51 and read the whole section on equipment financing. I'm just talking about illustration number one. He could have financed a logging truck 2 years sooner, in year two. Now, you can take that same idea and that same ability and apply it to an even distribution of age classes. You may be senior of 65. If you're insurable, you can back up that even distribution of age classes by two generations, is what I'm saying. All right. I hope that answers your question. No, you're not too old. The question is, are you insurable? And when you understand the power of the dividend-paying life insurance properly structured, and I know that's broad, and what I mean specifically by that is designed personally for you. Your income, your age, your duration, all of that matters. Your policy should not look like my policy. My policy should not look like your policy. And none of them should look like their policy. You should have a legitimately designed policy for you. And the only way you can do that is to have a relationship, in my humble opinion, with an educated advisor agent who understands you, what you're trying to do, where you're at, where you want to go, how long do you want to take to get there. And without compromising and trying to find a shortcut, there are no shortcuts in the infinite banking concept, right? There are none. And when you do try to take a shortcut, you, the consumer, the agent, whether knowingly or unknowingly, it's not going to serve you as well compared to not taking a shortcut. A very direct path to what you want. Working with somebody who can help you work through that or show you the difference between shortcuts and direct paths. Okay. That's a great question. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you have a question that you would like answered, email me at james@bankingwithlife.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.